The views expressed throughout this podcast are solely those of myself and the guest and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of ATCC or any other institution. Welcome to Behind the Biology, brought to you by ATCC. I'm your host, Dave Yarmosh, and today we have the honor of celebrating ATCC's centennial anniversary. We started in 1925 and have come quite a long way since then. Standing in for ATCC today is Dr. Ruth Chang, our CEO. In this episode, Ruth will share her personal journey in science, the story behind ATCC, and what the organization is focused on today. Thank you so much for joining me today. Really appreciate it. Obviously, you are the head of ATCC right now, so this really means a lot that you've taken the time for us.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's a real pleasure to be here, and I'm a lover of podcasts, so I'm looking forward to this conversation and sharing a little bit more about ATCC and my career.
Perfect. So, well, first off, I mean, congratulations on your new role. I think that sounds a little funny because you've already been in it for several months, and by the time this episode even airs, it'll be about a year by then. Still, how does it feel to lead ATCC during this milestone year, its centennial year?
Well, it's a real honor. It's a true honor, right? And privilege to be able to step in and lead a company in its 100th year. First of all, not many companies get to celebrate a centennial. So that in and of itself is really special. And to step in as CEO, you know, I don't take that lightly, right? It's a privilege and honor to help reshape what the next 100 years will look like for ATCC, what we provide to the scientific community, and certainly, you know, the people who are the backbone of this organization.
Well, that's inspiring, for starters. I know I've heard you speak many a time, and one of the things that has always resonated with me, even before you were the CEO, is just the way you talk about the people of ATCC. You know, it's I don't know, maybe it is a naivete or a cynicism that I've grown up with, but there's this idea of the CEO as the uncaring bottom line. And when you speak, that does not come across. So,
well, maybe it's because I've never pictured myself as a CEO, right? I think even today, think of myself as a scientist, a really curious person and leader overall. So I don't know what folks, you know, have in mind when they think CEO, right? Think of those letters in that role. I've never had, I think, a very strict perception of that. Likely to our employees, I don't show up as what they may imagine a CEO, right, to be. For me, it's really about going back to, okay, what's most important for ATCC? It's mission. It's sustaining that mission for the scientific community, doing good work, and ensuring, you know, you don't get to do that good work without good people who care about that mission and who live that daily. So I think regardless of titles or roles, right, we all have the same focus at the end of the day, which is sustaining the good work that we do.
Absolutely agree with that. Now, you just said that you still consider yourself a scientist, and I want to hear more about that. So where did your passion for science come from initially, and then just how has that sort of grown over your increasingly storied career?
Yeah, I've thought about that a lot. I can't pinpoint an exact moment where I said, wow, that's cool. I want to be a scientist. I think over time, you know, when I was elementary school, even middle school, I thought, okay, I love to read. My parents will tell you I read everything in the library and then some. So I thought I would write. I would be a journalist, right? That, again, speaks to probably the curious nature that I have. As with many folks, there are important connections that are made. For me, it was in high school. I had a fantastic science teacher who saw something And I ended up going to a science-focused program my senior year of high school in Toronto. And at that time, it was an OAC year. We had a different timeline than the four-year traditional high school in the U.S. And so I took all of my science and math classes at a hands-on science museum.
Wow,
and I think
really?
That really sparked my interest, right? To be able to do project work, to create sumo wrestling robots, to, you know, do hard things with wonderful people in an incredible setting. That sparked, you know, my interest even further. And that's when I said, oh gosh, right? I want to study science. I want to know more about what this is all about, whether it's physics, biology, chemistry. I didn't know at that point. But ultimately, you know, I went on to study biological sciences, because biomedical engineering didn't exist at Cornell at the time. And then ultimately biomedical engineering.
Wow, that's fascinating. I didn't know there were options to take classes
I didn't
at
either.
Museums.
Yeah, I didn't either, except for that teacher, right? And I think there are just those moments where someone else might see something in you, you have an opportunity, and it's up to you to make the most of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you brought up your high school teacher. I mean, we talked about mentors a lot. I mean, maybe that's just part of the nature of being a scientist, but it comes up in a lot in conversation. You know, people will typically speak about their college professors, their graduate school professors, their first employer or something as their main mentors. And I'm guilty of that too. I mean, I've been working for Jonathan Jacobs for a decade now, and he's been a fantastic mentor to me, and I wouldn't trade that for anything. But I've had a couple college professors that were super significant in my life, my career. But the high school ones, I feel like they just don't get as much attention. And I can name a couple off the top of my head that were incredibly significant to me. And so, I don't know, it's just sort of heartwarming that your first thought was to go back to that high school teacher and you just casually said that. I feel like it shows a level of insight that I really appreciate.
Well, that's where it started, but not to take away from my graduate advisors and college professors, I absolutely learned so much from Dave Mooney, you know, my graduate advisor at University of Michigan and at Harvard. I learned from him what really good science looks like, how to communicate that as well, and a lot about leadership. He's still a mentor to this day.
Excellent. And yeah, I mean, like you were saying, it does just all start there, back in high school.
I do feel like a lot of our identity is centered around that period, those teen years. And I still think of, you know, I grew up in Scarborough, Ontario, just a suburb of Toronto. I still think of that area as home, despite my, you know, immigrant roots and Thai's heritage roots in Shanghai, China.
Incredible. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I sort of still think of myself as a New Yorker, too.
Now,
don't
is that
spend
where
a lot
you
of
went
time
to high
there
school?
Anymore. Yeah, born and raised on Long Island, and went to school everywhere outside of Long Island in New York. Okay, so I don't want to necessarily dwell on this for far too
Sorry,
long.
Sorry, I took you off track.
No, this is great. This is so much more interesting. But I do want to get to the rest of your career. You haven't been at ATCC since you left graduate school, for instance. So could you give us a brief walkthrough of how that has sort of progressed or had progressed to this stage?
Sure. Graduate school or postgraduate school, I went to Boston Scientific. That was really my first job after getting my doctorate. And, you know, I'm not sure I knew what I signed up for, but I am, you know, game for anything, I would say. I was very lucky. I applied to a number of places, and this was just a cold application at that time. I saw a posting for a scientist position. I wanted to be in the Boston area. And at that time, actually, I had two opportunities come up. And I chose, I chose to start my career at Boston Scientific as a scientist in corporate research. I moved on to do many things since then, but the majority of my early career was spent in med tech, med device companies, so Boston Scientific and then Smith & Nephew. I then went to a startup called Agnovos Healthcare, and that brought me to the DC area. And from there, I really, startups are hard, took a lot out of me. I wanted to take a break, a conscious break at that time. And so I started doing a number of, I never quit a job, right? But after seeing Agnovos get on pretty solid footing with clinical studies underway and a CE mark, I left and I said, I'm just going to see whatever comes up next. And lo and behold, I met some folks from ATCC, Mindy Goldsboro, and then Dr. Sipes. And I started as a consultant. So I didn't know that I wanted to be at ATCC. I was just exploring and I wanted to do something that was different. And my curiosity led me to a private nonprofit and learning, the differences there and a highly recognized scientific organization, right? That wasn't just profit driven. It wasn't about regulated, the world of regulated devices that I had known up to that point.
That must have been really interesting shifting gears. I mean, not that ATCC is unregulated or unstandardized, in fact, quite the opposite, as you well know, but how does it compare to medical devices?
Well, it is very different, right? It's on very different ends of the spectrum, whereas our materials are used at the beginning of a scientific plan or project, right? It's really the foundation of a new scientific discovery. And I find that incredible. It's that ripple effect of, gosh, you don't know where that's going to head. Ultimately, it might take years or decades, but it is the scientific knowledge that will form new diagnostics, new therapies, right? New industries to form. At a med tech company, it is, and especially for profit ones, it is very much about, clinical risk benefit, making sure that products get in surgeons or clinicians' hands. There's a lot about the regulatory pathway, reimbursement pathways. So I loved actually the complexity of putting all of those pieces together when I did portfolio planning and strategic planning at Smith & Nephew, right? You have to see all these disparate pieces come together to see success in a new market segment and put it all together. But we, those are not necessarily true at ATCC. ATCC is much more about what's next in biological discovery that we can support with foundational models, with new standards, and ensuring that foundation is really solid, right, and reproducible.
Okay. I appreciate it. That makes a lot of sense. And that was honestly just a question for me. So that sounds like you're sort of getting to the next question that I had loaded, which is what's the importance of having a resource like ATCC? And it is this foundational model or these foundational materials for all of this research. Is that about right for your opinion?
Well, given it's the centennial year, I've learned a lot about ATCC's history. And it really goes back to a number of leading microbiologists at that time wanting a source of truth, right? We identify new strains. This is what defines that new microbial strain and creating a resource to hold that. Right. So that foundation of scientific truth, I think, is still very valid. Especially now, as we think about virtual models and, created data sets, right? That high quality foundational piece is, I feel like, more important than ever. And so at ATCC, we're doing a lot. We have an incredible repository of materials. I feel like at the end of the day, right, that physical holding is part of that foundation of truth.
Yeah, that resonates with me. As you might imagine, being a bioinformatician, it is often difficult to explain what my job is to people that are not in this field or an adjacent one. And one of the things that I come back to very frequently is, in the cultural zeitgeist, DNA sequencing is sort of a known quantity, right? It's a bit of a black box, but it's a known quantity. And so much of it relies on that same sort of foundational knowledge that, especially now that it's happening so much faster, so many more different microbes or, human gut is constantly in news stories and stuff like that. Having that truth becomes increasingly essential. We're dealing with microscopic traits that even with a powerful microscope are not easily physically observed, right? You can look at something and see truth, but you can't look at DNA and see truth. You can't look at a vial of microbe and just see truth. And so having a trusted resource like ATCC becomes reliable. It makes the research reliable in the first place. Otherwise, there's a little bit of guesswork, and that's where the danger lies.
Yeah. You still have to go back and validate, right? Any new piece of knowledge or discovery, it has to be reproducible. And so we've gone rapidly, right, from just trying to decipher biology, reading DNA, to now creating and engineering biology. And when you do that, what are you, editing upon, right? It's really important to know what the starting point is and be able to reference that.
100% agreed. I imagine this requires a significant amount of innovation within ATCC alone, right? We are now a century-old company, and biology, obviously much older than that. But there are methods that have been traditional throughout this time. And keeping up with modern technology and so forth, that requires a significant degree of innovation, especially because we've got a legacy of standards. How do you feel that both you as CEO and ATCC in general has fostered this culture where we can maintain that innovative stride that keeps us sort of relevant and active?
Yeah, I mean, I think for any company, maintaining that relevance over time is critical. So, and how do you stay relevant? I mean, I think one aspect is not being complacent, right? You never know everything. And you have to depend on, your customers, your partners, your leadership, and the folks at the organization to say, hey, pay attention here. This is interesting. So that you can have a good sense of what's coming down the pipeline that will be either a risk or an opportunity. So, a lot of my career has been spent around technology scouting and sensing. I mentioned portfolio planning and strategic planning. There's short-term planning, budgeting, resource allocation, the annual cycles of strategic plans. But there's also the, longer range, right? For a med tech company, that might be 3 to 5 years. At ATCC, actually, and it's hard to plan out what science will look like in 5 to 10 years. But what's clear is that we need new tools to enable that. One example is alternative methods. right? There's a large push to move us towards using more complex in vitro methods, decrease animal testing, shorten the time frame from preclinical to clinical. How do we do that? Well, we need reliable new methods, right? New models to enable that shift. And so that's an example of where ATCC has an incredible role to play. And that type of, you know, hey, that shift is coming, that's not something that we push, right? That comes from understanding the environment, the external landscape around us, hearing from others, that then informs our strategic plan and vision.
That makes sense. So it's responds to the new needs and opportunities of the community as they develop. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the way you tie that back into your career in medical technologies. It sounds very natural to have moved from one to the other. I hesitate to say progress, but to make that jump, that background of experience seems very applicable to your current role. And it's another thing that just, you might not have thought of it that way before, but it comes out very naturally as you speak about it. Before we run out of time, I've got two more that I'd like to hit in this episode. So, and this one might be biting a bit from the next one, but is there a lesson from the company's 100-year history that you find personally inspiring or instructive, especially within your leadership?
Well, I think that's a really good question. That was not on the sheet, Dave.
No, it was not on the sheet. No, going over it this morning and changed my mind.
You know, with any company, there's an evolution, right? And, you know, the story is that ATCC was saved from the brink in the 90s, right? And kind of almost like brought back to life. I think that is really important. I mean, I do have the benefit of having a very stable foundation from which to build from. Mm-hmm. So I don't necessarily feel like I need to worry about that. But at the same time, that is a large responsibility, right? To make sure that we don't get into a position where we can't sustain our mission going forward and we need to make tough decisions. So, you know, I carry, I guess, that aspect of the DNA of ATCC, right? Because we're not here to ride the ups and downs of the market or, you know, trends. You know, standards are here to stay. That's why they're standards. And so we make decisions for the longer term, whether it's around benefits for our people or hiring or program investments.
Very nice. Thank you. With the last question, it's going to get a bit more personal. Hope you don't mind. You mentioned earlier being of Chinese descent, immigrant into Canada, and presumably then into the United States.
Actually, the other way around.
Oh, no kidding.
So I landed in Berkeley, California, where my dad was a graduate student when I was 5 years old, almost 6 years old. So I've moved around a lot. And I've lived in California, in a couple different places in Michigan, and then, you know, Toronto or the suburbs of Toronto. And then I came back to the U.S. and then got stuck. So, you know, I am Asian American. I am Asian Canadian. It's really hard to nail down, you know, exactly kind of my identity from that perspective.
And with that in mind, you're also a leader of a major STEM company and There is, I feel like it'd be almost wrong not to mention that there is a general perception, and it might be a truth even, I don't know the statistics on it, that we don't have a lot of women in leadership roles in science, that we don't have probably a lot of women in leadership roles in business. And so what I'm getting to with this is, what's your opinion on the significance of this kind of diversity in leadership, especially in a STEM field that we operate in?
You know, I think only until more recently have I been asked about this aspect. To me, over time, it's just, I want to do a good job. You know, by nature, am someone who, you know, works hard, and I've loved every organization I've been with, and you know, what I feel very strongly about is just diversity of opinion. And I think oftentimes you get that when there are different people around the table. And, you know, maybe it's my roots in innovation and leading innovation teams. Part of my leadership role has been encouraging and building teams that look further out than the near term. But when it comes to innovation, confirmation bias is really dangerous, right? So how do you combat confirmation bias? Well, getting more opinions around the table, right? So not seeing all decisions or situations similarly, you know, in order to do that, and the best way to do that is really having, therefore, you know, a more diverse leadership and set of experiences, whether they be business or social, right? Kind of upbringing experiences. We all bring different things to the table when we come to problem solving together.
Excellent. That makes a lot of sense, especially in light of what you were just saying about avoiding complacency. I feel confirmation bias and complacency are often, you know, very tight bedfellows.
Yeah. Yeah, different experiences matter a lot, right? And it's probably, you know, my bias that it's good to be curious. It's good to be, you know, take some risks. Don't be fearful about doing something new. And that's really what moves, you know, businesses forward as well.
Absolutely. And especially because I think different experiences undeniably a valuable asset to have, but the experiences themselves don't need to be, in my opinion, at least relevant to what you're doing for your occupation.
For sure.
The differences in experiences can be anything and have an influence on the way that your brain works, that you think, and how those ideas present themselves later.
I believe in that strongly, the power of orthogonal thinking, right? Most problems most problems have been solved, just maybe not exactly in the same way in your industry, but many times, you know, a similar problem, right, has occurred adjacent to the company that you're in or the situation that you're in. And you can borrow good ideas from other places.
Excellent. I agree 100%. And on that note, we are going to wrap this one. Thank you so much, Ruth, Dr. Chang, for joining us. We'll be back for the next episode.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's such a pleasure to think about these aspects of my career. And I can't wait to hear what we discuss next.
Yeah, me neither. And thank you for taking the time out of your day. That'll wrap up our first conversation with Dr. Ruth Chang on ACCC. From her passion for science to ACCC's vital role in the research ecosystem, it's clear that both she and the organization are deeply committed to building beyond the boundaries of a biorepository.